You're listening to Georgia Public Broadcasting live from Tyler Perry Studios in Atlanta, where the stage is set for tonight's Democratic presidential debate, kicking off with 10 candidates at 9 p.m. on MSNBC. I'm Ricky Bevington here live in the Media Center. And throughout All Things Considered this evening, I'll be interviewing guests, experts about Georgia's role in the 2020 presidential contest. Joining me now is Erin Haynes. She's race and ethnicity reporter with the Associated Press. Hi, Erin.
Hey, nice to be home. Thanks, Ricky.
You are home. How far away from where we are sitting did you grow up?
You know, I grew up about 20 miles south of here. I definitely was born in Atlanta, so, you know, I've got the cred, you know, just in case people are wondering, born at Grady Hospital, but I grew up about 20 miles south of here in Fairburn.
Grady baby.
Absolutely.
So could you have imagined a Tyler Perry Studios here
you
when
know,
you were
I
growing
just,
up?
It's my first time being here at Tyler Perry Studios, and it really is remarkable, right? I mean, I think that, you know, being here on the stage set is really, it makes you think about the historic moment that we are in. I mean, most of the presidential debates up to this point have been on college campuses, but I feel like it's a very Atlanta thing to be having this debate at Tyler Perry Studios, a symbol of Black Hollywood, as Atlanta is often referred to. To have these candidates on this stage, I think, is definitely something that couldn't have happened anywhere else.
It's so Atlanta.
It's so
like
Atlanta,
you said.
For sure.
So the last time Atlanta hosted a Democratic presidential debate was 1992, Bill Clinton, Paul Tsongas,
sure,
Jerry Brown at the Carter Center. Why return to Atlanta now?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, being here in Atlanta is a show of the strength of the Black vote, right? I mean, bringing the debates to the South, really, for the first time is something that we need to think about. We're 100 days out today from the South Carolina primary, the first primary that's going to be in the South with a majority of that primary electorate being African American. It's time to think about Black voters, really, who, as we know, are the backbone of the Democratic Party. And so having this conversation here, I think, means that we're going to have to talk about race. We're going to have to talk about the importance of the Black vote and issues like voter suppression. I mean, right over our shoulder right now, Ricky, is Stacey Abrams, the, you know, Democratic gubernatorial nominee who narrowly lost in 2018. And that is something that's certainly looming large over a lot of people's minds, you know, tonight. I think we can hear, I mean, we can expect to hear, you know, a lot of these candidates on the stage name-checking her, you know, this evening.
And for our listening audience, Stacey Abrams is literally standing 20 feet from us giving interviews to all of the media. But I want to talk about Black voters, Erin.
Sure.
There's urban Black voters.
Yeah.
There are rural Black voters.
Please mention it, Ricky, because I think, you know, we do have to talk about Black folks when we talk about rural voters, especially in the South. Yeah.
And what's the difference? Do they want different things? Are they all Democrats?
Well, I think that they have different priorities, and it is different from them. I mean, you think about urban cores, you know, like Atlanta, you know, that are consistently, you know, Black voters here consistently vote Democratic, but also are able to elect Democrats, right? That's not always the case in rural communities, especially, you know, with gerrymandering being what it is, right? Like the idea of one person, one vote means something different in rural communities when you're talking about your state representatives or, you know, district contests. But when I think you see a real difference, especially with rural voters who are African American in terms of statewide elections or national elections, right? When they actually feel like their vote is going to count, right? You do see them turning out in higher numbers. They definitely feel like elections matter a lot more for them when they are able to weigh in contests where they feel like their vote is actually going to count. And I think that that's definitely going to be the case headed into 2020.
It's significant that none of the Democratic presidential candidates here today are having any campaign events outside of Atlanta.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that certainly, you know, Stacey Abrams is somebody that recognized the strength of the rural vote. You know, yes, she was not able to win the governor's race last year, but she contested, you know, across this state. And that is something that she is encouraging Democrats to do headed into 2020. If those folks can be engaged and galvanized, you know, they could be a part of the electorate that is a significant factor, given that most of our national elections these days are elections that are won on the margins. And so every vote counts. And that could certainly include the rural vote this time around.
Erin, you cover elections. Your beat is race and ethnicity, mm-hmm, for the Associated Press. What does that mean?
Well, right now it mostly means covering the intersection of race in the 2020 election and kind of how those themes are playing out in the campaign right now. But really, I mainly cover the intersection of race, politics, and culture, which is something that I certainly know a lot about, being from Atlanta. I cut my teeth in the Atlanta Bureau, really covering issues like the legacy of the civil rights movement, the black electorate, historically black colleges, the black middle class here, you name it, issues of economic inequality, education, kind of really whatever. Atlanta is a microcosm for a lot of things in black America. And so it was the perfect kind of training ground to do a lot of the work that I'm doing now.
You wrote a 2018 article for Columbia Journalism Review called My Life on the Race Beat, and you wrote, quote, race coverage, which requires the same sort of expertise as business or education journalism, is essential to reporting on who we are as a society. Why did you write that?
Well, I mean, I think, race is really the unfinished business of our country. And I think that the 2016 election was definitely a reminder, if not revealing for some folks, that is true. And that there, exists in this country a real lack of understanding among a lot of Americans about who their neighbors, who their friends are, who they are maybe worshiping with in terms of race. And so in attempting to reckon with that, I think that having a working understanding of the racial dynamics in this country is very, very important. I think about things like the New York Times' 1619 Project, which, attempted to kind of recap what, the 400th anniversary of the enslavement of black people in this country means, just how eye-opening that was to so many people who didn't know that history, who didn't learn that history, frankly, when they were in school or at home or somewhere else, just demonstrates how far we have to go in knowing about that. But I think as a journalist, it is an expertise I've come to understand and appreciate, just as much as any other beat in journalism. And so, covering politics, I've had to learn how to do that, right? But not everybody who covers politics has learned necessarily how to cover race. And I think that is going to be very interesting headed into next year, as I really do believe that the race and politics intersection in 2020 is going to be just intertwined. Really? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, unavoidable, certainly.
Absolutely.
And we are only hours away from the 10 Democrats taking the stage to debate. What's the significance, though, as we talk about race and politics, that the, according to polls, the top Democratic candidates are all white?
Absolutely. But, race is still playing out in this election. I think that says a few things. One, when you talk about electability, which is a word that's on the minds of a lot of voters here now, less than 90 days out until Iowa and the first votes are cast and people start making their voices heard at the polls. I think that you have white candidates who do understand that they need to appeal to black voters if they are going to get elected. The path to the nomination goes through black voters. And if, any of the candidates of color are going to break through between now and this primary season, they are going to need to be able to prove that they can appeal to white voters to show that they are somebody that can be the nominee to go up against Donald Trump in 2020.
Erin Haynes is race and ethnicity reporter for the Associated Press. Thank you so much for taking time out of your coverage of the campaign to talk to me, Erin.
Happy to be with you.